The federal government is open for business again, now that disputes over Obamacare and the debt ceiling are behind us, for now. Here in California, it's been a relatively tranquil budget year, but the road there has been bumpy. Just ask the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court. Nearly 3 years into her term as Chief, Tani Cantil Sakaue has had to weather severe cuts to the statewide legal system with layoffs, courthouse closures, and shorter court hours. This week, I sat down with the Chief for a wide-ranging chat. We began with how those budget cuts are affecting the delivery of justice across California.
It's undermined justice. It's also contributed to a two-tier system of justice. Well, what it has done is made your day in court unattainable. It extends it. It makes it seem insurmountable when closing courts and reducing hours or basically denying justice across the state.
And who suffers most?
The public suffers most, but I would say primarily low-income, middle-income businesses trying to resolve their disputes in an orderly way, in a way that they have expectations to resolve things. That's who it falls on the most. The truth is that those who can will use other private alternatives to resolve their disputes. But those of us who need to go to the court, who don't have those kinds of resources, find ourselves getting, I think, frankly, a second system of justice.
Yeah. Another issue that has been a budget issue in California is the prisons. And this week, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected the governor's appeal of caps that have been put on prison population in California. The governor saying if we release any more inmates, it's going to threaten public safety potentially. Were you surprised at all that the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, wasn't more sympathetic to those arguments?
No, I'm not surprised. Well, these arguments have been ongoing since the former gubernatorial administration. And we know that this governor has made many changes. California is under incredible change with more resentencing, a different kind of resentencing, with more parolees in county jail and on the streets than in the prisons, with courts having to deal with a split sentence, with Prop 36 passed by the voters, where a certain type of three-strike offenders are entitled to be resentenced. So we're looking at a sea change in criminal justice in California, and the cap is part of that. But we've known about this cap for some time now.
I know that one issue you've been very involved and concerned about is juvenile justice in California. Tell us a little bit about why you feel that should be such a high priority.
Because a child who is suspended in school has three times a chance to have contact with the juvenile justice system. And once in the juvenile justice system, they're out of school, they're disconnected, and they have an even greater chance of going into the adult criminal justice system.
When you were appointed, a lot was made of the fact that you were the first Latina, Filipina Chief Justice in the U.S. What do you make of that? When you hear that description of you, what goes through your mind?
Well, I'll say in the beginning, it sort of startled me because I've been on the bench 20 years before I went to the Supreme Court. And I've always been Filipina, Portuguese, American, and I've always been female. And so you get sort of used to that over the years. And so when I walk into a room or I'm interacting with a group of new people, it's not necessarily what's on my mind as to how they perceive me. But when there was that statewide recognition, it reawakened old memories of starting out being the diverse person in the group. And it awakened memories of experiences of my parents and parallel experiences of different immigrant communities in California.
And the court also is very diverse, the Supreme Court, but the court system in California is still about 68% male.
That's right. Becoming
more diverse, but not nearly as much so as the state Supreme Court is. What difference does it make?
Well, I think it makes a big difference. First of all, I think for the public to have confidence and trust in our public institutions, that they need to know that they have access to those, not only to appear, for example, in court, but also to be a part of the court if they choose to be part of the decision makers. And it's true, the population of judges doesn't reflect the ethnic population of California, nowhere near. In fact, no minority party in the judicial branch breaks two digits. So you're right, we have a long way to go to reflect California's diversity.
Quick question about the initiative system in California, because the same-sex marriage, Proposition 8, was before your court, before you got there, and
yes,
since you've been there. And one of the things that happened during that period of time is that you wrote an opinion that was unanimous, saying that if you're a proponent of a ballot measure and the governor and the attorney general don't want to defend it, that you have standing to defend it in court, and yet the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court said no, they didn't have standing. Where do you think that leaves the initiative system in California?
I think that it leaves the initiative system in California still intact, because our decision still is controlling for the state of California in terms of standing in that unusual circumstance. Of course, I have to say I read the dissent as authored by Justice Anthony Kennedy very closely and with many cheers, understanding our initiative process in California that you alluded to is so different from initiative processes across the country. We're unique in California, and in California, the Supreme Court is the final and the only review of an initiative measure.
Which some would argue should change.
That's right. Many would argue should change.
Yeah. Chief Justice Tani Kantil Sakaue, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure.